is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis. I welcome Andrew Peake, former senior director for European and Russian Affairs, National Security Council for the Trump administration, now at the Atlantic Council, writing at the Daily News about the immediate future of Russia's entanglement in the Donbass with Ukraine, an active war front. However, looking beyond war are the diplomats waiting. And Andrew is proposing the next conversation about what is to be done with Ukraine. Andrew, a very good day to you. You are imagining a future that is coming on to us, an undiscovered country in which the United States takes the lead in conversation with Moscow to achieve what about Ukraine? Good day to you, Andrew.
John, thank you. And thank you for having me on. The most important thing now Biden can do is to seize control of the end of this war. Unlike the Minsk agreements, which set, which established a ceasefire in 2014 and 2015, those were negotiated by France and Germany. The United States needs to be in the forefront of a bilateral negotiation with the Russians to establish the parameters of a settlement deal that will keep Ukraine safe. And the most important thing in this deal is that it involve an element that is non-Ukrainian. Most likely this would be in Iran, but it could involve any issue that illustrates to the Russians that the safety of Ukraine is more than just a local interest, that it affects the bilateral relationship with the United States and thus Russian interests across the board if they continue their aggression.
Minsk 1 and Minsk 2 were a negotiation right after the crisis began in 2014-2015, negotiation between Russia, Ukraine, France, and Germany. Is that welcome to continue in this conversation, or is that in the history books now and we need something new?
No, Minsk is gone. Minsk 1 and Minsk 2 are gone. They were based on the false conceit that not involving the United States would make this an easier settlement to achieve, that the Russians would not view this as a bilateral Cold War type zero-sum game. But very much it is now a bilateral zero-sum Cold War style game because we have made it so, rightly or wrongly, over the past 1.5 years, i.e. clearly Russian and U.S. interests are clashing in Ukraine, and pretending it is otherwise does nobody any good, especially they don't do us good, because our policy utility from any settlement is going to be lower if we let the French and Germans negotiate, in addition to the main reason, which is that it makes Ukraine less safe. They are allowed to be perceived as a local interest, not a regional global interest.
You make a distinction in your remarks, Dr. Peake, between the tactical and the strategic. The tactical, I presume, means arms to Ukraine to continue the front line in the Donbass or near to the Donbass, and more financial support to sustain the Ukrainian people as they flee or re-enter their country, all tactical. So we come to the strategic, and what you're talking about is a world for the 21st century, I believe, I'm asserting here, that begins to resemble you're with us or against us. Is that where we're headed, Andrew, if we don't change the story?
Well, I think absolutely the United States needs to insist on giving Ukraine the means to defend itself. That is what gives us leverage in this situation. It's what makes Russia more willing to negotiate. That is without prejudice to the strategic, to the final conclusion that whatever political settlement we arrive on in the end with us and Russia and the Ukrainians. That's the differentiation between the tactical and the strategic. And on the tactical, we should be all in. On the strategic, we should be looking holistically.
And the holistic, I want to imagine what this looks like. You recommend in your piece, and this was a fascination to me, we ask for more than Ukraine. We ask for more than stop bombarding the cities. We ask for more than the obvious war criminal conduct of the Russian army. What would that look like, Andrew?
I think the most obvious answer to that, John, is something to do with Iran. We know the Russians have been pushing very hard to have some modality of their trade with the Iranians unsanctionable, i.e. some trade route in the future that is off limits to U.S.-based Ukraine sanctions. They want that very much, obviously, to go around our sanctions, which are likely to stay in place in the wake of any ceasefire. But kind of more importantly, this is something very akin to how Nixon viewed the relationship with the Soviet Union during the Vietnam War. The Soviets were at a time where they wanted to relax tensions or to work bilaterally with the U.S. on certain issues. And Nixon and Kissinger kept saying, look, we've got the Vietnam issue. You cannot have a good relationship with us and continue to arm the Vietnamese. And the U.S. needs to follow a little bit the same policy with Putin's Russia. If they can't make progress with us on other issues, if the Ukraine war continues to go on.
Dr. Peek, we have a division in Europe that is obvious from this distance, which is the Eastern countries, the Baltics, Poland, and now Finland and Norway, I'm presuming, are involved clearly in arming up and anticipating a belligerent and threatening, provocative Russia. This conversation between Moscow and Washington, what does it say to our allies who want to maintain the watchtowers?
They would be far happier if the United States were doing those conversations than if the French and Germans were having those conversations. 100%. 100%. They trust us as the, rightly so, as the actual guarantor of security in the East, with actual interests that align with the Eastern European front. And with Swedish and Finnish interests if they join NATO, whereas they're very much more suspicious of French and German interests, and rightfully so.
I said Norway, I meant Sweden. Thank you. Andrew, what we're looking at then is a program in the future. It doesn't necessarily involve this Congress or this president. It is where we're headed, that this frozen conflict that will be a drain on Russia and Russia's resources indefinitely. This frozen conflict, Russia has a stronger motive than even what? Even the United States to resolve this. Is that your measure?
I think that's right, John. I think there is, without some kind of strategic settlement, there is no ceasefire that restores the Russian economy. A tactical ceasefire, as you saw in 2014-2015 under Minsk, won't do it. So absolutely, they need some kind of broader strategic settlement.
Was this available in our final minute? Was this available in 2015 under the Obama administration? Did they entertain this? I don't recall.
One of the challenges of 2015 was that the great decision points had kind of been lost. The Ukrainians were starting from a very, very poor tactical footprint. The key city of Debaltseve in the east was almost completely cut off. There was a little pocket. So any favorable tactical outcome that could have been achieved would have been necessitated by a radical escalation, which at that point, very late in the day, was unachievable. They were trying to stop the bleeding, given the amount of material support we were providing the Ukrainians.
In our final 30 seconds, can we say to Putin, you don't get out of this unless you do what we say? Can we be that blunt?
We can if we're arming the Ukrainians, 100%, John. And that is why you insist on maximalist tactical means without prejudice to the strategic ends.
Dr. Andrew Peek of the Atlantic Council was the Senior Director for European and Russian Affairs at the National Security Council in the Trump administration, writing the Daily News, the undiscovered country of negotiations with Moscow. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.